learn from the depths of the badland. With a gun and a knife and a waistband. With the war with the devil and Shaitan. He wore a bad toupee and a spray tan. So high now, hoping that I land. On a tie stick, moving through Thailand. On the radio, heard a plane hijack.
Welcome back to the Lookout Landing newly revamped podcast. I think we are on like version 5 of this sucker now. As we're kind of going through different changes at the site, and we appreciate your patience and apologize for our somewhat extended absence. In case you forgot, I am Kate Prusser. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing, and I am joined tonight by my close personal friend, John Troopin. John, how are you?
Doing well, Kate. How are you?
I am well as well, and happy to be back here with you in your mellifluous podcasting voice.
Absolutely. We are obviously missing Jose, who has been called up to the great baseball writing and media production ship in the sky. But
okay, wait, that makes it sound like he's dead. He's not dead. He got a real job. Why wouldn't you go for he got called to the big leagues? Like, what? It's so obvious, John. It's right there. Come on.
I'm sorry. All right. It's spring training for all of us.
Jose, if you're listening, I'm sorry that John just implied you were dead because you got an actual real paying job. We are so proud of you, Jose.
Yes.
In all seriousness. All right. But the show must go on, or the virtual show in your ears that's happening right now. So John and I are going to soldier forward here. And, you know, John, we're very close to opening day. Are you excited?
Not really. It's just kidding.
Was that your attempt? You're such a sincere person that honestly I couldn't suss out that I think I've never heard you be sarcastic. So that was...
You have fortunately caught me in many good circumstances with lots of beer in my hand. So... it's been increasingly easy to be sincere in those situations. I don't remember being as excited for an opening day as I am for this season.
Praise hands emoji on that. Like, absolutely. I am so excited for this year because I feel like even if the team isn't as good as we dream they will be, last year was so much fun. Right? Mm-hmm. Last year was fun.
Extremely.
162 notwithstanding. 161. 161 it was, right?
And most of it was fun. I mean, yeah. it was the fun, like, oh, my heart's going to give out in about 5 minutes fun, but until then, I'm going to live it up type
of
experience.
Yeah, I could maybe stand for 2017 to be a little less, thrilling than... 2016. I feel like 2016 was the teenage years with like the highs and the lows, and everything was so dramatic all the time. It was like living in Tumblr. And then, you know, hopefully 2017 is a little more like in the 20s. We're still fun, but we also like pay our bills on time.
I'm definitely working on that latter part of the 20s, so I'm looking forward to when we get to it. But
I don't know.
It's
I'm
an
in
exciting
my 30s
thing
and I'm
to look
still
forward
not really there,
to.
So
hey,
fair,
it's
fair.
All good. But yeah, I think you touched on a really good point, is that there's a lot to be excited about this year, and obviously we are both optimistic people. We're both very high on the Mariners,
and we're both team fun.
Exactly.
Have fun or go home, as our third base coach says.
But I think exactly.
So yes, if you're looking for a doer podcast, you've come to the wrong place. I'm sorry.
But I'm curious in that vein. You know, it's there's such, you know, some people I think would define, and you hear coaches and general managers and even players define, you know, a season's a success if we win the World Series, and you don't want to say anything less than that, you know, otherwise it seems like you're not really committed. But I'm curious, Kate, as someone who is really optimistic, you know, what do you think would qualify as a successful season for 2017?
So, you know that I am a big women's basketball fan, and I have been following the Husky women very closely this year. because they've been amazing. They've been so much fun to watch. Kelsey Plum is a generational player. Mm-hmm. I feel so privileged to have watched her and Chantel Osorio and all of those girls play together in, you know, in my backyard, essentially. So that's great. And I had the most fun, and they didn't win the NCAA championship, and mm-hmm. they actually didn't get on to the Elite Eight even.
And they lost the conference championship too. I don't mean to pile on to them.
Yeah, yeah, no, thanks. thanks for reminding me. No, they suffered sort of a humiliating, not humiliating.
Surprising.
A surprising, that's a better word, thank you. Early exit from that tournament as well. And so, like, by those measures, you have a couple of the best players, definitely in the conference, but probably in the whole, in all of women's college basketball. And you can't make it that, like, a lot of people would look at that and say that season was not a success. But
sure.
I think Kelsey Plum had such an amazing season. I had so much fun watching the team. They had so much fun playing. The outcome wasn't exactly what they want, but it's hard to look at that season and not call it a successful season. So to me, I feel like the focus on the championship and winning the World Series and all, of course that's the goal, but only one team gets to get there, and everybody starts in the same place.
Yeah.
So I feel like if you're putting an entertaining product out on the field that makes people want to tune in every day, and really exciting things are happening. It was so exciting to ride the train to these women's basketball games and see all these people, all these kids, all these little girls dressed up in purple and with their faces painted. And, you know, the atmosphere
absolutely.
Was electric.
Absolutely.
All I want is that atmosphere. Like, I want people to be excited about baseball in this town again, because it's been so long.
Do you remember, I mean, obviously, in your writing and just in general when we've talked, you talk a lot about how your baseball experience is informed by those teams from the 90s and even the early 2000s, but that you, when you moved away for school and for work, that you weren't here for a lot of the sort of the down times.
No. I blessedly was out for that whole 2010 season.
Which was a wise choice, let me tell you. But I'm curious if you know, talking about those sort of exciting moments, like, what is your memory? Do you, you know, trying to tie those together to, you know, times where you had those same experiences of, like, everyone's traveling to the game, everyone's talking about the Mariners, you know, everyone's talking about the Huskies, everyone's talking about this, you know, we've had this happen, obviously, it's trite to compare the Mariners and the Seahawks all the time, but you have that happen oftentimes too much in Seattle. But do you have distinct memories of times where that happened with the Mariners, when you were growing up?
Yeah, like, I remember coming home, I think I was in school, one of the playoff games that we had, and just everyone on the West Seattle Bridge honking their horns. And, you know, I mean, we've had that too with the Seahawks, like, people in my neighborhood, which is sort of like a staid, quiet kind of neighborhood. I mean, people go out and shoot off fireworks after every Seahawks victory now. I hear that. I have no idea where it's coming from, but...
I'm sure they have permits, though.
Oh, sure. Yeah, firework enthusiasts are always, I find, really, really mindful about all the red tape.
Zoning laws.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Perfect.
But, you know, I hate to borrow from that, but it is, there's that feeling around the Seahawks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would just love to see that translated to the Mariners, especially because... it's the most beautiful time of year in Seattle, right? It's a fantastic time to be here. And it's summer and a lot of people have time off. And it would be such a great thing for the city and for the state of baseball in the city and for the franchise that, you know, I would like that electricity in the air, which,
I agree. I mean, when I think about success and disappointment, you know, as you talked about, you know, trying to compare it to other things, since we've had a lot of one in recent memory and we've had very little of the other. And I think, you know, I thought last year was a successful season. I thought 2014 was a successful season. But I think I generally define success in my sports fandom as, was I entertained? You know, did I find this team compelling to watch on a night-to-night basis? You know, and, you know, do I find the players relatable and entertaining? And it's very difficult for me to imagine not at least being entertained by this team. So, you know, I think both you and I see this team as a playoff team, but I don't think we... I think we're realistic in understanding the AL West is very good. The, you know, rest of the league is very good. There are many sort of question marks on the roster, and, you know, there's a lot that can go wrong. And, you know, I think a disappointing season, you know, obviously has a good amount to do with wins and losses. But it's not that high a bar for this season to be a success, in that there are so many entertaining, compelling, talented players on the roster. And I think this team being in contention for a playoff spot in August, in September, and going into October, I think that by definition will make this an entertaining season and a successful season. And I recognize there are limitations. There are, you know, player, you know, the core of this team is aging and has somewhat of a window, which may put a little more pressure on, well, if we don't get it now, then are we ever going to get it? But I don't know. It's a very stressful and limiting way to view it. I shouldn't say I don't want to tell other people how to fan in any way, but for me, having played on and been a fan of really atrocious teams for a lot of my life, you know, finding success has a lot of definitions. And I think as long as this team is competitive and entertaining, I think we're very likely to be a successful team.
Well, it's just so much more of a narrow margin for success, right? If you're defining it, sure, by this thing that mathematically only a certain number of people will achieve, or right, only a certain number of teams will achieve.
Right.
So if you have a more expansive definition, I think by rule you have a higher probability of getting joy out of the season. And
right,
I'm all about joy. You know, this is maybe, I mean, a low bar to clear, but I was watching the Rockies Padres spring training game today. Look, I had stuff to do. I just had it on the background, okay?
Sure.
But I was watching all these balls get hit out to the outfield, and I was like, oh, that's an out. And then the Padre, I mean, Corey Spangenberg is maybe not a great a great person to be basing
when your best outfielder is playing first base, I think you have a questionable team concern.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm not, the Padres had some messes out there, but
for
it just occurred to me how quickly I've adjusted myself to the new normal of, like, if a ball is hit in the outfield, it's going to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not going to drop because we have a bunch of guys. It's been so interesting to me how I'm not fully recalibrated yet. I still see balls go up in the air and I'm like, oh, that's in the seats, or that's going to drop in foul territory. Like, I'm not used to seeing guys who can just glide over there and get it. And I think just that it's so aesthetically pleasing to watch good athletic play.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yep.
You know, I've been eating that government cheese for a long time, and all of a sudden somebody handed me like some nice Tillamook. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait.
No, it's whether this team is good, you know, and I think people have talked about this on a national scale. I think people have talked about this locally. All of these moves have changed the style of the team dramatically. And whether that is going to make a difference in the win or loss column, obviously, I think we are optimistic that it just logically makes sense. But even if not, you know, I think those games are going to be more fun to watch, win or lose, mm-hmm. and more exciting to watch on a nightly basis. And, you know, I think since 2014, and yes, 2015 was miserable, I agree, but since 2014, I've had this feeling of, oh, we're not really ever out of a game, are we? You know, it's the first time in so long that we've had an offense that always was able to, you know, make a comeback at any given time. Because if you get, you know, Cano, Cruz, and Seager up, that's you have a really good chance of scoring, like, every time they're up. And now we have potentially competent hitters in front of them, and we have potentially competent hitters behind them. It's like, what? This is crazy, you know. And whether that translates into wins, as we've said, there's, you know, so many question marks, particularly in the rotation. Maybe not, but man, it's going to be more entertaining to watch.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, they won 86 games in 2016. Mm-hmm. I've been predicting or pegging my hopes on 88. Mm-hmm. I think 88 is enough to maybe do some damage in the division.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's an improvement from last year. You take out June from last year, and that was a playoff team. They just could not rebound mathematically from that June swoon.
Yeah.
So that's the baseline of what I really want to see. I want to see them not just fall over in one of those months. And I am worried about how we're going to come out of the gate here against some really tough.
Indeed. And I think that's going to be tough, right? Because we play Houston, we have the Angels, and then we have Houston at home again, right?
Yeah.
That's the first stretch. So that's a lot of fun. You know, and they're missing, I think they're going to be missing Colin McHugh and maybe one other player, I think a reliever, if I'm not mistaken. But for the most part, you know, that's a team that, I believe they played a game today against the Cubs.
Yeah, I watched part of that.
It was just a slugfest. You know, laser show. You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
It's yeah. So they're going to be a truly unpleasant. You know, they're sort of the gnat that, or the mosquito that's been sucking and the Mariners were swatting at for a while, and now they've grown into just a monstrosity.
Yeah, I was going to say. Then it like. Pass through a nuclear power plant or something, turn into swallowed up Ulieski Gurriel and Ulieski, yes. Is that right?
Yeah. Ulieski, indeed.
Yeah, he's terrifying to me. Yeah, no. And Beltran, that was fun. I watched Beltran mash some balls.
Yes. There are many things I'm sure
yes,
he did.
I mean, that's an objective fact.
That is fair. I will say, of the many things that worry me about the Astros, a 39-year-old DH who is making $16 million, $18 million, is low on the concern.
Oh, pride low goeth before concern. The fall, Troopin. I am nervous about that. That's just a lineup of bashers right there.
It's going to be nice. It's going to be troublesome. I will agree. Well, we can, I think, we'll talk a little bit more about the division and our expectations at the end, but I'm curious quickly here. We have really anywhere on the roster, and Andrew Rice actually did a really great job of outlining this in a piece earlier today when we're recording this, I guess maybe a few days back by the time you're listening to this, but looking at the potential good and potential bad for a number of players on the roster. But I'm curious who you are with a team full of so many people with, honestly, low floors and high ceilings. Who most excites you and worries you? And who do you think you have maybe the best opinion of and the lowest opinion of relative to maybe what others are thinking?
This is dicey to predict. And I'm not predicting huge things.
I believe it's pronounced Dyson. I apologize. All right.
But I'm
thanks for listening.
Okay, let's just move on. I am actually, I think that Mike Zunino will not be a crazy superstar. I think he's still going to strike out a bunch. Yeah. But I think he's going to walk more.
Yeah.
And I think that I think that what we see out of him is not necessarily the incredible world beater that he was when he came back from AAA. Mm. I also don't think it's going to be the sort of slow dying swan that we saw at the end, where, you know, he just waved the bat kind of limply. You know, that was when he was trying to do stuff on his own. I think we're going to see a Mike Zunino who gets up there, who has really good plate appearances, who takes some more walks, who hits into the shift a lot, or who strikes out, who's still an out, but is able to manufacture a few more walks and isn't the gaping black hole in the offense that he has been.
And receives a cookie from Scott Brosius
yes,
when he gets
exactly.
to first base each time.
I think that Mike Zunino, I know that his wife keeps a food blog, and she detailed, I know that, I feel like very strongly that he's food motivated, so I hope that's actually a plan, where he gets a cookie every time he takes a walk.
Do you have a projection based on, what's Mike Zunino's wife's name?
Alyssa.
What do you have a projection based on Alyssa Zunino's food blogging? What might best motivate him that would be waiting at first base?
It appears to be pancakes.
That's not a bad call. It might make him a little bit lethargic, and I don't know how I'd feel about squatting for 2 to 3 hours after eating. I think I would sit down and might be a little sleepy, which, like, you can get by maybe if Kuma's pitching, or, you know, even Felix, unfortunately. But when Paxton's out there, you really need to have your eyes open.
Oh,
so
shoot.
I'm not sure we can
if
give
Andrew
him.
Moore gets called up, I mean, that kid is like five. He'll reel off five pitches in the time that it takes Mike to get into his
one
crouch.
Blink. One
yeah,
blink.
Exactly.
One pancake blink.
One pancake more is what they call him down at AAA.
Maple syrup more. it's an ironic nickname in one sense, I suppose.
I believe he's Greek, actually. His mom is
Andrew
Greek,
Moore or
I
Mike
think.
Zunino?
No!
I believe,
I mean, come on.
someone's, yeah, I was going to say, I believe Meg Rowley is going to fight you.
No,
if you try and claim
I'm bad
his...
at geography, but not that bad.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
No, Andrew Moore is of Greek descent, I believe, on his mother's side.
The curls at the ends of his hair have a little bit of that in them.
They're a little bit of the Cyrillic alphabet there.
Indeed, yes.
Do they use the Cyrillic? Jesus, I am bad at geography.
Depends on which one's Cyrillic. If that's the one that the Russians use.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Then yes.
Okay.
It's that sort of that whole area of, yes.
Wait, Greece is not close to Russia. Like,
no, but it's Eastern
Europe.
Which
one of us is bad at geography?
No, but Eastern, it's sort of, the Russians adopted their alphabet out of, because they came from the Greek Orthodox Church, which used that alphabet.
Right, right.
And so they have their own version of that church, they have their own version of that alphabet, you know, and sort of you go anywhere up in the Balkans and the alphabet changes just like a tiny bit. So when I would go across the street to the Bulgarian market that I was buying these 3 euro, like, liter or like 3 liter bottles of beer, and I was trying to figure it out. For some reason, the letter K in Greek doesn't mean that in Bulgarian, and it's nonsense, and I'm very upset with you, Bulgaria. But that is on our other podcast.
Yes.
Coming at you, Bulgaria. Anyway.
I was hoping you would like bring that back to Pazos somehow while we're going through the Greeks.
Fair enough. No, I don't know where Zipchinski is from, but I believe that's a little
He's
bit
Polish.
More Polish.
He's
yeah,
from
okay.
from Chicago, the Chicago area, I believe.
Okay.
Which has the highest population of Polish people outside of Warsaw.
Excellent.
I hope that fact is still true. It was true like 4 years ago.
Do we have any more sort of general Eastern European stereotypes that we can throw out on this team? We need to get them out now. No. Okay. So I bringing it back to your Zunino point.
Zunino and pancakes. Somehow, Zunino I don't know pancakes. How we got so far afield. But,
for sure.
I think Zunino puts it together, isn't a superstar, but is also not the disaster that we have seen him be.
Okay. I think there's a lot of discussion that's happened this offseason about Hisashi Iwakuma. It appears almost if you were a Mariners fan, you might have a fairly positive sense about Iwakuma, especially about his season last year, in that, you know, he was the only Mariner to make all of his starts. He threw 199 innings, which essentially he threw 200 innings for the first time in his career, you know, and was sort of the steady performer for the Mariners in their pitching staff. But there's generally, I think, a sense around baseball otherwise that, oh, Hisashi Iwakuma fell off. And I don't know, where do you sort of stand on that sense? Because obviously we've seen him this week in spring, and this whole spring, his velocity doesn't look great.
Yeah.
His location, his accuracy, which has historically been excellent, wasn't really pinpoint. And last year, whether it was intentional or not, I'm not sure we ever really got confirmation, but he changed from being a ground ball pitcher essentially to a fly ball pitcher. It's interesting to see, is he going to be able to continue being effective, or is his decline essentially complete, like it has been talked about sort of nationally?
Well, you are kind of the pitching expert, so I would love, and I know that you did a lot of work with Jake on Jake Mailhot, about how Jerry has changed around this pitching staff and what he's been acquiring.
Sure.
So, I mean, my feeling about Kuma is he's always a little scary looking. I also think he's really smart.
It's the eyes.
Just
the fierce, like, glare that he always has.
The bear glare. the bear glare stare. He's a Care Bear.
Indeed.
I'm going to stop. He's up there and he's got, like, super slow stuff in a league where everybody is just throwing the hottest fire they possibly can. And it's scary because he's always been a finesse pitcher. And what happens if that finesse goes away and we're all kind of waiting for the red gem in his hand to light up and, you know, for him to be spirited off the field in exchange for Andrew Moore, I guess.
A lot of metaphors for death in this podcast far.
You know.
We are Lookout Landings.
We're just getting ready for the Game of Thrones season premiere.
This is fair.
It's all going to be boobs. Death boobs. That's, I believe, the Russian translation of Game of Thrones. Death
Excellent.
Boobs.
Excellent.
Anyway.
Written in Cyrillic, as we now know.
So I think Iwakuma is going to be Iwakuma. Like, he's going to give up runs, but he's got the super athletic outfield behind him that I think is going to compensate for some of those flaws. The question is, can he be healthy? Because in his last start, he just didn't look right, and he talked about not being able to find his balance. And, you know, I mean, Arizona's hot and uncomfortable, and he's a sweaty gentleman. Have you ever noticed that? Like, his hair is always just
his hair slick. Glistens.
He's slick with sweat at all times.
Definitely.
So I can't imagine. Maybe Hisashi Iwakuma just hates fucking Arizona, and he would not be the only person.
It would not be unreasonable.
He would not be the only person who hates Arizona.
I think the point is solid that, you know, as long as Iwakuma's out there, he's going to be okay. My concern is that he physically is not going to sustain a full season, and that's not him, you know, falling off a cliff talent-wise, anything more than that. He's 36 years old, and that's kind of what you do when you're 36.
Hey, tread carefully here,
professional. When you're a professional athlete and you're competing against a bunch of 23 to 27-year-olds, you are likely to have a steeper physical cliff to have to avoid the precipice of. How's that? While you will make up for it with many other wily, guily, and Wade. Drew Smiley.
Nope. Oh my gosh, Ryan Roland Smith was on the broadcast the other day, and they were making him say Smiley in his accent. And he was like, I hate you guys, which is so great, because they were just so clearly delighted. They were so sad that when Wade Miley was traded away, and they couldn't make him say Miley anymore. So now that we've got Smiley, which is a pretty... Ryan Roland Smith is a delight. In general, but this was an especially delightful segment. It was on 710, I think 2 days ago.
Sure.
Yeah, if you missed it, it's definitely worth a listen.
Excellent. So yeah, the way that they're working Iwakuma, the way that they're talking about working Felix in terms of working up in the zone, I think will be valuable for him if he can execute that. It's difficult to change habits that you've had your entire career and I think people talk a lot about like making the shift from being a starter to being a reliever, and I think that is overblown, but I think making a shift in where you every pitch are throwing the ball and where you're aiming, I think you're taught from a young age to aim outside, low and away, aim low and in, these places with these pitches, and consistently aiming your fastball up in the zone is not necessarily something, but throwing it for a strike is not consistently something you're taught. So I think that is a big change, but we've seen a few different looks. I know Jake Mailhot looked at this a little bit. I know Jeff Sullivan wrote about the shift in where home runs are coming from, and that with the change in swing angle that a lot of hitters have undergone recently, more home runs are coming from pitches lower in the zone. And actually, Mark at USS Mariner did a Felix-specific look at this. It was also really good to plug another Mariners site here. So there's a lot of good information indicating, yes, it's uncomfortable and weird to say even if your fastball isn't that great, you should throw up in the zone. And Giovanni Gallardo, who I think all of us are pretty low on, though it may be tougher to be lower. It may be a competition to see who is the lowest more than anything else. He's a guy who, if he's walking lots of people, then he just doesn't have any value. But if he's just throwing fastballs and getting fly balls, that still can be valuable, especially in this construct that the team has. And whether that works or not is, remains to be seen. But, home runs that occur in Peoria and in Jalisco, Mexico, in the WBC, when it's 80 to 90 degrees and you're at 5,000 feet and you're at, essentially the 90s Coors, that's a different kind of issue than, walking a bunch of people. So I'm optimistic about the pitching philosophy. I'm worried about the pitching health. But if the pitchers are out there, I think they're going to be fine. But obviously, soggy arms, achy backs, fingernails, all of these things are, hamstrings and whatnot. it's frustrating to go to enter a season feeling like your rotation needs to be put in bubble wrap already.
It's very scary. So let's talk about something happier.
Fair enough.
Let's talk about who you are really high on relative to the consensus around the league. Who will it be? Who will it be?
I'm fairly enthusiastic about the outfield, particularly right field.
That's a clever way to back into this. Okay.
Indeed. Well, yeah, and I, you know, I think I don't feel the need to go too much more in depth. You know, the enthusiasm is obviously pretty well spread at this point. It's not just me chirping in every time, but hey, he got a hit. Hey, he might do this really well. Hey, he was really good in this.
We're talking about Mitch Haniger, in case people didn't know. In case you've never listened to this podcast before, John Troopin is the original Mitch Haniger fan and has been basically since he got traded to us, right? Like, you kind of did a little bit of a dive on him because...
Jake was the initial person to do a look at his swing. And I looked at it, a lot of the stuff that he was doing while he was, right after he had posted that article, just talking about what the swings
adjustment was. As per usual, all good things come from Jake Mailhot.
Naturally. And ended up looking into his sort of whole backstory and the variety of adjustments that he'd made throughout his career, and how at essentially every level he had struggled initially and then made an adjustment and dominated. And, you know, that's kind of the story of many very successful athletes and many successful baseball players, and a lot of them eventually hit a wall. But I think the encouraging things that we've seen in the off season have been backed up not just obviously by having a really successful spring, but by who those spring successes are happening against. You know, they're not just happening, you know, it's not just...
Oh, yeah, no, they're early in the game.
Exactly. It's not just, you know, Tyler Smith, who, you know, great stuff. Like, it's exciting to see, but when you're coming in a lot of the time in the sixth and seventh inning, you're essentially having a really good game against a AAA team or against a AA team. You know, when you're getting those hits and getting those good at-bats against, you know, the starting rotations and the, you know, top relievers, that's an encouraging thing to see. And hearing Edgar and, you know, opposing coaches, opposing scouts, you know, top, you know, writers and analysts who are coming to visit the team, and sort of every, you know, teammates, you know, everyone saying, hey, this guy is someone you're going to want to watch for, you know, that Edgar wouldn't even let someone finish the question before he said Mitch Haniger when being asked, you know, who's going to surprise. You know, it's like, all of this is great and could mean nothing in the season, but I think the all of the pieces are there for him to be not just a really solid high-floor player who is good defensively, has good speed, not great speed, but good speed, you know, but that the plate discipline is there. So even if he's having a bad stretch, like, you know, last year when he first came up to the big leagues, he didn't hit spectacularly. He hit decently. He also had like a 260 BABIP and still was almost a league average hitter because he was walking and he was getting on base and he had power. And, you know, so... And he had one of the higher... he had a well above average exit velocity on his hits. So, and we've seen it even, you know, this is a more minor thing, but, you know, he's hit on occasion some choppers to third base that the third baseman backhands, you know, makes a play on, and then turns and throws, and he'll beat it out. And third baseman might get an error on that, but that's an out for Seth Smith. That's an out for Franklin Gutierrez. That's an out for a lot of other players. Nori Aoki trips and falls out of it. No, just kidding. But, you know, those are the little areas that are filled in. And so I am optimistic about him not just being a defensive upgrade, but in fact being an above-average hitter and really making a difference.
He has quite an arm, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not just good at with speed and range out there, but I believe in his ability to gun people down.
For sure. No, it I am not really concerned at all that he's going to be a solid player. I guess that's where I'm at. So, is there anyone really else that comes to mind before we get to before we take a quick break? I guess and then get to our season predictions. Indeed.
I just want to briefly address the big three and some of the conversation that's gone on around them, because, you know, everyone is saying regression happens, age sure. happens, you know, they combined last year for a WRC plus of 139. Mm-hmm. I don't think projection systems are as warm on them this year.
No. to put it succinctly, no.
I think they're predicting like a loss of something like 10, 11 maybe WAR war.
No, I believe what Andrew said was, hang on. You should say that again, because me just saying no is super rude and shitty and bad podcast.
No, okay, let me look up Andrew's.
So Andrew said 5, because they were worth 15 last year, and they were, I think you could say that, or you could just say, I think they were worth around, because I believe they were worth around 15, and they're projected for around 10.
Okay. So I think they were worth 15, and they were projected about 10, which I think is low. Like, that is low. That's 3.33333 something, right, for each of them?
Yes. On average, that, I think most look like it's around 4 for Cano, 4 for Seager, and then around 2 for Cruz.
I think that is bonkers, ridiculous, backwards. Because everything I've seen of Nelson...
Tell me how you really feel,
no,
kid.
That's bonkers. It's bonkers. Because everything I've seen from Nelson Cruz has been murdering baseballs. Like, in the WBC, in spring training. I think he's really leaned into the idea of being a DH. And he has bulked up his upper body incredibly. He's huge. Mm-hmm. He is just so... He looks so strong. And if his one job is just to punish mistake pitches, I think he's going to do that. And I think he's going to put up 5 war.
I like that.
I think he's going to hit 40 bombs again. I hope I'm not jinxing things, but I just think he's going to...
Mm-hmm.
I think he's... Sometimes Nelson worries me a little with his plate discipline, because he does swing so big. So that's the one. I don't want him to get over anxious. And, you know, for pitchers to kind of feed on that aggressiveness and make smart pitches and get him out.
Yeah.
So that's a concern. But as far as his age-related decline, I think that is hooey, because he is... He looks better, I think, than he has ever looked, just from a pure musculature standpoint.
He is, sir. The guapo does not fully encompass.
Guapissimo. Maybe.
There we go. We're approaching it, and I think the point on his aging is, you know, it makes sense why projection systems say that, because when you say 36 gonna turn 37-year-old man. Whose numbers pretty strongly rely on power, and not speed, and don't have too much else, and doesn't play
right. And, no
and
defense.
Plays the least exactly no
he,
defense.
He's gonna play. I think he's gonna play a little bit in the outfield.
I think
he's gonna play a little bit in the outfield because.
So what would you here? For I have two questions. One, how many games do you think he played in right field last year? And two, how many games do you think he's going to play this year?
Did he play like 30 last year? 50?
He played 48 games in right field last year. So that is...
That's a fair amount.
Yeah, yeah. That is a fairly sizable percent. That's over a third of the games.
Yeah, he's going to play less than that.
So
a lot less.
I would put the over-under at 20. And I might take the under, pending, I guess.
Well, he's guaranteed for all of the interleague games, right?
Pretty
so how
much,
many of,
yes.
How many of those are there?
Definitely a few.
Well, no, like how many, though? Is it 5? Is it 10? How many?
I would put the over-under at 20. And, yes, he is going to play in some interleague games, but I think it would be, I guess, how many do you think he'll play in this year in the field?
I was going to guess like 30, but that's, with all the outfielders that we have, it's just, it's like a face-saving thing, I think, where Service has to kind of act like he's going to put him in the outfield. But like I was watching that Wilson Gloves put out a little video for Glove mm-hmm. Day for each of the teams. And there was Cruz getting his glove and like examining mm-hmm. the webbing and talking about how excited he was to like make catch. You know, come on, the guy wants to play. You have to let him just sometimes, just to keep him happy, just to keep him in a good mental
space.
You know
what's a really fun... I was a pitcher only for... essentially 3 years in college after 1 year of playing first base as well. And my favorite part of practice was batting practice because I got to go into the outfield and run around and chase fly balls. And I bet Nelson will enjoy that in a very limited, with a watchful
okay.
eye, with all sprinklers retracted.
Totally recessed.
Christopher, I'm looking at you.
All right.
Enjoy his little
okay.
hamster wheel of entertainment.
Oh, no. This is awful. I feel, God, getting old just sucks. It sucks so bad.
See, the key is to never be fast to begin with, because then you don't miss losing speed.
You don't miss your lost athleticism.
Indeed.
Fair. Okay, so whatever. I think the predictions for Nelson Cruz are way too low. I think he's gonna mash so many home runs and
mm-hmm.
and outplay that. I don't know if Cano's gonna do what Cano did last year, but I think Kyle Seager is going to continue to get better. So mm-hmm. if you're projecting him at a downgrade. He always gets
directly
better.
In his prime.
Yeah.
So.
So I mean, I feel like that's kind of aggressively low, and it's especially low on Cruz, who just is going to make up for so much of that with his bat, I think. But what do you
Fair
think?
Enough. I think I love your 5-win prediction for Nelly.
Okay, that was like a little intense. I get worked up.
I think it's the age thing too.
Like I get worked up when people want to insinuate people in their mid-30s can't do stuff. We can. Don't put us on the ice floe.
Indeed, it's cozy out there. Really loosens, really relaxes your joints. I think it's good. It's going to be interesting. I agree that Seager is going to be as good or maybe even a little bit better. I think Cano's power, purely just in that he has not shown that before to that degree, or at least not in a while, seems like it may regress a little bit. But, he's also going to have a lot of opportunities to hit. You know, he's going to have a lot of opportunities to hit with people on. I think Cano's power will fall off. And I think Cruz is going to continue being Cruz. I think he is as good at maintaining his body, as you said, as anyone in the league. We've seen players sustain their health really impressively and really capably throughout their late 30s. You know, David Ortiz is a great recent example of a guy who played DH for a long time.
Yep.
And because he was not asked to do anything defensively, essentially, he was able to focus on hitting, focus on, you know, strengthening certain parts of his body, and was an incredibly valuable player.
And I know someone like Nelson Cruz would look at David Ortiz and be like, I am more of an athlete than that person.
Absolutely.
I don't want that treatment. But I hope that someone is able to make him understand that, like, this is not a referendum on you and your body and your ability, but it is a way to help you extend your playing career longer.
Yeah. And I believe Nelson Cruz, he had a discussion about learning to be a DH and acknowledging that that's essentially his role. I believe it was earlier this offseason.
It was our friend Arvin Gonzalez.
Yes.
Friend of the podcast, or friend of the site.
Friend of the podcast, friend of the site.
Sent us the link to his, and a very helpful translation of mm-hmm. what he did in the Dominican Republic. A press conference he did there.
Absolutely.
Where, yeah, he talked about how it's boring. And he's having to work his mind around the idea of being a DH only.
Absolutely. What I will say is, you know, there are boring things, and then there are nice things. Like, Starling Marte isn't going to run into you and knock a baseball out of your hand. So, I'm very much looking forward to designated hitter, full-time Nelson Cruz. It's a lot of fun, and I bet this year he's going to not have to sit around and wait quite as often because the offense is going to be just a little bit better. So he's going to get a few more at-bats.
Yep, I agree. All right, so should we maybe take a little break and then come back and hand out some awards, some predictions?
Sounds good to me.
All right, we will be right back. And we're back. All right, John, it is time for us to make some super serious. I just cracked my knuckles. Did you hear it?
I did, and I'm scared.
It was a super badass.
Several miles
crack.
Away.
Yeah, exactly. That is the sound of me getting serious. Me getting down to the nitty gritty. Let's hand out the Robinson Cano Award for most valuable player for the team.
All right.
Who do you think it will be? Because we're naming this after Cano because he was the most valuable player for the Mariners last year, yes.
I believe so. Depends on your rating system. Could be Kyle Seager by some.
If you're Foire or Boire, do you mean?
Indeed. Well, and I think, like MVP, we can use some intangibles.
Could we use it on handsomeness? Because
hey, whatever you define as value, friend. I ain't here to tell you how to live your life. I think it's going to be Kyle Seager, honestly. I think in terms of making the biggest, you know, impact in terms of a leap, it may be James Paxton, which, again, you know, we've talked about, is it really a leap when it's just doing what we know he can do in half a season over a full season? You know, maybe not. But in terms of the guy who's going to be out there every day being productive, hitting, you know, getting on base, having every facet of his game really be maximized, Seeger's going to be there, and Cano will be good. Cruz is going to be good. Paxton's going to be good, and you know, I think there's going to be excellent production throughout the rest of the team. But it's going to be most notable from Kyle Seager, I think, this year.
All right. I'm going to stick with riding the cruise train. I'm on the cruise ship.
All right.
So I just think he's going to have a monster offensive year and just hit the stuffing out of the ball.
It will be exciting to watch him. You know, I mean, it's already been fantastic, and we've talked about, you know, it's tough to find a better, even with, you know, the Astros having this disgustingly young, talented lineup. It's tough to find a better 3-4-5 anywhere, and having hopefully slightly more competent production in front of them. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, does the MVP even really pertain to the team where we have the combinations from the three of them?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Most valuable pals.
Most valuable pals. I love it. I also think Diaz is going to have a breakout season. I mean, he did kind of last year already, but I think just, like, the work he's done with
mm-hmm.
getting to be more durable and, like, mm-hmm. having that experience in the WBC. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a little bit of a fire in his belly, and I think everyone on that Puerto Rican team feels like there was unfinished business, and mm-hmm. I think they're going to wreak some havoc on mm-hmm. the league this year.
Yeah. He is one of the people I'm most excited to watch, and seeing him befuddle hitters is as satisfying as anything. I've gone through the Baseball Savant archives and looked at a lot of different stuff on him and seen, you know, when you watch some of the sliders that he was throwing in July versus the ones that he was throwing in August and even early September, it looks like a different pitch. You know, it's so devastating.
Is that post the Joaquin Benoit?
I think he learned it early on in July, and he was still working on it, but, you know, because I looked at the movement numbers to see if there was actually a difference, and there wasn't a drastic change in any point, but in terms of his consistency and the confidence that he was throwing it with in different counts, it was really impressive to see. So I'm looking forward to the next step in that.
Okay, so let's also do the Ketel Marte Least Valuable Player Award. And this is never fun to talk about, but also it was not fun to watch Ketel Marte at bats last year. How did Ketel Marte come out lower than Adam Lind?
Adam Lind was blessedly in a platoon with our wonderful friend and new member of a team that I can't remember at the moment, but a team that will be very happy to have him. Sadly, not in the MLB. But, yes, Ketel was truly very rough and was bad defensively, bad hitting. And
remember when he killed Taiwan Walker's perfect game with that throwing error?
Yeah.
It was also a bad pick by Vogelbach, who was not as good at first base as I feel like he looked this spring training. Like, no. I feel like this Dan Vogelbach would have made that pick, but that Dan Vogelbach did not.
Indeed. Alas. In terms of player, I mean, least valuable in many ways, I think, demands that you are there a lot and are still really dragging the team down, and I don't know. I mean, the players that I'm most pessimistic about are Gallardo and just first base in general.
Mm-hmm.
But neither of those spots feel like they're going to. I mean, maybe I don't know how much, unless they feel comfortable in calling up DJ Peterson, how much they really have behind Valencia, unless if they really want to give Vogelbach the work. But you know, if Gallardo's really terrible, they're gonna move. You know, they're gonna move him out of that spot quickly, I think. So I think it might be Iwakuma, which is rough. A tough thing to say because he's my favorite pitcher.
I love him so much more now that he has an Instagram too. It's so cute. Like that was the one thing kind of holding me back from Iwakuma love was I didn't know him personally at all, you know, and just like what he shares on his Instagram and how positive and happy he always is. Like what a great guy. So yeah, that makes me sad.
I guess what I'll say there again is if he's out there with this defense and, you know, working in Safeco, he's going to be okay. So this is contingent on I am deeply concerned that he'll pitch for a little bit, had some time on the DL, come back, not look great, come back, not really have it, and sort of sputter through the season. I really don't want that to happen. I'm not saying I think that's going to happen, but it is my biggest concern. He is my biggest concern in the rotation, sogginess aside. What about you, Kate? I know you don't love to
I don't love this negativity.
Be down for much, but
no. And I really, really hate my answer here. Because I thought he was gonna be good. But I think Leonis Martin is gonna have a bad year. I hate saying that. I hate it so much. But his spring training at bats looked bad. You know, he just aggressive. I didn't see the nice swing changes, all the stuff that he'd been working with Cano on, like, just was not evident at the plate. And, you know, spring training is not predictive at all. And he's bulked up a lot. But they're making him go back to kind of being more of a hitting it on the ground than hitting it on the air. And I thought a lot of his improvements came with that improved launch angle. And, you know,
he's
I'm
a lot
concerned.
Of adjustments.
And also, I think he was not going all out because it was spring training. So he played a pretty conservative outfield, but I am a little concerned about, you know, just stacking him next to those super athletic defenders out there. No, it's seriously, like, all of a sudden, Leonis looked kind of slow. Like, he looked great next to Nori Aoki and Seth Smith, but he looks not as impressive next to Haniger, Heredia, Dyson. I mean, it's so that concerns me.
Gamble even has been.
Oh, Gamble.
Gamble seems to lead the team in diving catches, which is a very peculiar metric. But he is. You know, I think we've given him a lot of grief due to our general love of Heredia's tools, but Gamble has also done, you know, a solid job.
Yeah, and I am really.
If it were not for Guillermo Heredia's existence, I think we would, as a fan base, have a lot of positivity
about
Ben Gamble.
His mom angrily added me on Twitter, which I still feel bad about, and I am sorry, Siri Gamble. I am sorry I've been so negative about your son. I really. have grudgingly come to. It was just Guillermo.
It's not his fault.
No,
it's not his fault. He's just in an unfair comparison.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just Guillermo is so lovable, and we love him. But yeah, Gamble's won me over. I like Taylor Motter a lot too. If we're talking about sort of like fringe guys,
I do just want to be clear. In our discussion about who we think the least valuable player is, we are now discussing all of the fringe players that you love. Which is the most wonderful... No, it is not a critique. It's just the most wonderful proof of your commitment to positivity and optimism, and I am so appreciative of it.
I'm determined we're going to get... And I don't want Isabel to come and kick me for saying mean things about Leonis Martin. It's just he is the one I'm most concerned about. All right, let's talk about like what we ultimately think is gonna shake out. I've already said I pin this team as like an 88 win team. I think they're better than last year's team, but not that much better because of the rotation concerns. So that's what's scary to me. I think there's a lot of great depth, though, and so it's still going to buoy us up over where we were last year.
For sure.
And I was a lot more worried about the Angels when before I saw that they're starting Ricky Nolasco as their opening day starter, which...
Yes.
You know, the Angels are scary because they've built alongside us, I think, very similar. You know, they focused on outfield and infield and run prevention and kind of making up for a weaker pitching staff on that. Cam Bedrosian is coming back. You know, Garrett Richards is ideally going to be coming back, although not ideally for us. I'm not scared of the Athletics. I'm not actually very scared of the Rangers.
Not at all.
Yeah, but I am scared of, a little nervous that the Angels could be very pesky for us. And then the Astros are just world beaters. So just after watching that lineup today, they're just mashers. They're so fast and they're so young. And I feel like I say it every year, but like this is their year. So them,
for sure.
They finish first. And I think we maybe sneak in with a wild card. That's what I'm really hoping for.
Yeah. I think Houston takes the division as well. I think the Mariners have the makings of a very solid team, and you know, obviously right now as we're talking about this, if we find out Smiley's missing an extended period of time, a lot changes, but you know, there's not, you know, just going on what we know, I think this is a very good team. I think this is a better team than last year, just as you said. I have them pegged at 91 wins.
Whoa.
Which is optimistic. I realize, and I also think that the Astros are really good, and they're going to probably be in the 95 to 98 win range themselves. I'm really unimpressed by Texas and their rotation. So for, you know, obviously, you know, Darvish is spectacular, but Darvish hasn't made 30 starts in a few years. And, you know, Hamels has been on sort of a decline, and he's still a great pitcher, but he's not, or he's still a good pitcher, but he's not a great pitcher anymore. And kind of mystery after that. Mm-hmm. You have Cashner, you have Tyson Ross, you have Martin Perez, none of whom are guys who are all that impressive. Ross obviously has the potential, but he's also not expected to pitch for at least the first few months, and Cashner has injury issues as well, I think, already. So, not a lot there, and when your best player is a 37-year-old, I realize we've just talked about Nelson Cruz here, but Nelson Cruz
again, you did just killed it in the WBC, and
sure,
Beltray was so key.
Certainly, but as beyond that as well, like, I know I may be going a little counter to you in your selection of him as the team MVP, but if Adrian Beltre is expected to be your best player, then and a 30, which, you know, it's Adrian Beltre, so you have a grain of salt, but if a 37-year-old is expected, you're going into the season thinking this guy has to carry us, that's a lot to ask.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm not as worried about them. The Angels, if their pitching's good, they're going to be a playoff team. And
yes,
currently, Ricky Nolasco is their starting pitcher for opening day, as you said. And Garrett Richards still isn't quite all the way back. And Tyler Skaggs is still working his way back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not quite as concerning.
Shoemaker's a little concerning.
Shoemaker's concerning as a Mariners fan, but Shoemaker, I think, will be fine as an Angels fan.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not. I don't think that's worrisome about the injury.
Yes.
He is worrisome to us because now he's
certainly
healthy. And
certainly.
Although they didn't not have him for that much time last year, but they also had really just all of the Rangers' bad pitching luck that they've ever had just sort of fell on them this year. So.
So, yeah. So, I think Houston takes the division. I think the Mariners host a wild card game. And that would be magnificent.
I just did that kiss fingers thing because how much are we all going to cry if the Mariners get to go to a playoff game and Felix gets to start it? How many tears will the city of Seattle shed / the Northwest region shed collectively? I'm not forgetting about you Mariners fans who are far flung, but
I believe Washington State is currently maxed out in hydroelectric production.
It's been real rainy here.
And I think, well, in terms of, I believe we've dammed every river, and I believe we might find a little bit extra. We might find just another source of juice if that comes to pass, because we're gonna wash the viaduct down into the Sound.
Yeah, they won't even have to worry about Bertha anymore. Yeah. We'll just landslide a road.
They were worried about the tsunami coming from the west. It's coming from the east.
It's coming from Edgar Martinez Drive.
Exactly.
Well, I know that the whole city of Seattle, and probably much beyond that, not just the far-flung Mariners fans, the people in the region, but you know, I think everyone in baseball would like to see the Mariners have a win, you know, just because we're generally pretty likable and it's been so long. Mariners aren't annoying to anyone, you know.
We're funny, and damn it, we're likable. Exactly.
All right, well, we don't have any Twitter questions tonight because we were just kind of putting this together and seeing if it will work, but we'll definitely solicit questions from you for next time. And thank you so much for listening and for being patient with us as we start once again. But we're very excited to spend the season with you.
Mm-hmm. Next time we talk to you, there will be real baseball to talk about.
It feels like it's been forever. How's that sound? Right? Sounds
yes.
Delectable. Oh, transcendent.
We made it through the winter where it snowed in March in Seattle, yeah, which I did not think was a physical possibility.
You guys, we made it! We made it!
We made it!
All right, so we will catch you guys next time. Until then, go M's.
Go M's.